This is the PMP Industry Insider Podcast. You're hearing from Cole March and Triangle Pest Control's Donnie Shelton and PCO Bookkeepers, PCO M&A Specialist, and TurfBook's Dan Gordon, as well as some of the biggest players in the pest control and lawn care industries. We're talking about what is changing in the industry and taking you straight to the front lines of what the future holds. If you're ready to grow your pest control or lawn care business, you're in the right place.
Hello, everyone. Welcome out to another episode of PMP Industry Insider Podcast, where we look at what is changing in the industry and we take you to the front lines with those that are driving those changes in the industry. Thank you for joining us. My name is Donnie Shelton. I am owner of Triangle Pest Control and newly formed Triangle Lawn Care. Just for you. That was just for you, Dan, by the way. Also the CEO of Cole March, digital marketing and sales for the home services industry. And as always, I have my partner in crime, Mr. Dan Gordon. Dan, say hello, but keep it brief, okay? Just
hello.
Oh, not that brief. Come on.
Hello, everybody. It's Dan Gordon. I own PCO Bookkeepers and PCO M&A Specialists, and the PMP Insiders is becoming its own entity. We're getting quite a bit of press and play, and really enjoying it. And it's so fun to talk to really some of the leaders in the industry, and happy to be here.
Well, Dan, we have a great show on tap for today. We have our topic is how to build a large company in a small market. And do you want to take a moment and introduce our guest?
Yeah, sure. So we have Kent and Blair, who are the – are you co-presidents of Paul's, or is one of you – Can I start some conflict here? Is one vice president?
We have separate titles on paper, but in reality, we, yeah.
Yeah, so Donnie and I actually run a peer group and have been doing it for several years, and Kent and Blair have been members of the peer group, so we've both gotten to know them, really well, and a lot of fun, two terrific guys and a terrific company in a very small market that they're really just crushing it. And they, just for Donnie's own information, own a lawn care division as well. So
yes, they do.
Kent, Blair.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Yep, we're glad to be here.
I will add my accolades to that introduction there, Dan. I will say that I've known Kent and Blair for a number of years. I consider them both really good friends, and they're very, very solid. And we have a lot in common, both professionally and personally. And I love every time we get together with these guys and talk to them. And I always have a great time. So I expect this episode to be no different. So with that,
before we got on here, Kent is a pilot, and so is Donnie. And Donnie had to show a picture of his airplane in pieces and little plastic baggies with all the bolts and things, because I guess it's being rebuilt or something. So
it was a picture of someone's airplane, Dan. I don't own an airplane. Let's not get into that there.
Right. Yeah.
So, all sense of the corporation.
That's right. What is it? Shelton Avionics or?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about. I have no memory of what you just spoke of. So
let's
get into our topic, though, because I will say this. I want to spend some time in Kent and Blair. We're obviously going to have you guys talk a little bit about your background and where you're at today. But I will say this. In our peer group that Dan just mentioned, we have some really talented folks in there, some really great companies, and Kent and Blair consistently kill us all in profit. They kill it every year. And I'm always a little envious when I look at their balance sheet as well as their P&L, but they have done something what I consider to be nothing short of amazing. They're in the Tallahassee market, and I'll let them talk about revenue, but just the brand that they have, the size that they are, the way that they run their business, absolutely is a great model, I think, for other folks to follow. And so with that, how about we start with, how did you get into the business? We'll start with Kent and then Blair, and then after that, we'll kind of roll to where you guys are at today. So Kent, how did you get into the business?
Well, Blair and I married sisters. The original owner of Paul's Termite and Pest Control was Paul Nicholson. And as we were courting his daughters, I think Paul was scheming on ways to get us to move to Tallahassee. And so when opportunities presented themselves to take advantage of that, he did. And I came in 1989. And I was here for a year. Remember Blair and I were talking about it. I don't remember. It was just a few months before. Maybe it was at Christmas time. And he said, well, how are things going? I said, well, looks like they're going pretty good. You need to come on and join us. And so that was 1990. And we kind of gradually learned the ropes that Paul let us stick our necks out far enough to make small mistakes and get our feet wet, but not too far to do any serious damage. And so we were, I think that was a great way for him to kind of get us involved and get us familiar with pest control and the things that we would need later on. He passed away in an accident and in Argentina, where he had gone to do some duck hunting. And so we...
Not a plane accident.
It was not a plane accident. although we did talk about that before he left, interestingly enough. Blair and I had... The plan had always been for us to, you know, basically take over the pest control company. Because Paul did have a restaurant that he enjoyed working in, and that was kind of his, it was much bigger than a hobby, but that was really where he enjoyed being and being with people. But so Blair and I put together a plan to buy the business from our mother-in-law and did that a year later. So we've been business partners for 20 years.
How big was the company when you guys got together? Not necessarily before you bought it, but
In 1989, when I came in 1990, we had not yet done $1 million a year. And Paul's background was he had started in Orkin and had many folks that some that maybe listened to this podcast that knew of him in Orkin, and he determined that he didn't like the way Orkin did some things, particularly the way they worked out termite claims, and he felt like he could do it better and more friendly, and so he saved up a year's salary, and about 1971 moved back to Gadsden County, which is he moved back to Gadsden County, but he was operating in South Georgia in Bainbridge for a while, and he knew he had a year to build a business, and so he began knocking doors, and from there, about almost 20 years later, he had almost $1 million. Is kind of how that worked. It took him that long to get to the $1 million mark. So when
operating a restaurant.
Well, no. He didn't operate the restaurant until about 1988. So the restaurant really sapped his excitement for pest control because the restaurant put him on the map. And so but it didn't fund itself at first. So pest control company funded all the things that he wanted to do out there, which I mean this is a rabbit hole, but in essence he bought back into his family a farmhouse on 40 acres. The farmhouse had been built with slave labor by his fourth or fifth great-grandfather. And so he had the opportunity to buy it. He did. And he sat on it long enough to decide he wanted to build a steakhouse. And so what he began to do is he operated out of the main house and a smokehouse that was on the property. And one by one, he added a number of older homes that he would bring in on I-beam I-beams with 18-wheelers, move them from within the hour, you know, vicinity of within the hour. And he would fix them up, paint them, bring them up to code, and begin, you know, put a weight station and start serving out of a central kitchen. And so he built this, what kind of ended up being a little bit of a Knott's Berry Farm kind of a setting, to the point that they had an old juke joint, they called it, roadhouse, that they brought in that could seat as many as 250 people at a time. So the ultimate capacity was over 600 clients. And they often turned during legislative session or graduation from FSU, FAMU, these times of the year, they would turn that restaurant two and a half times a night. And wow. So it was a significant undertaking, and we all worked there. But again, all through the 90s, he did that. But come May of 1999, he was killed in an accident, automobile accident, while en route to hunt in Argentina. And so from that point forward, Kent and I ran the business, helped the family divest of the restaurant, and then made the acquisition the first day of 2001. And we were somewhere, as I recall, around $2.5 million by that point.
Did you ever think of investing?
We were at 1.2 then.
Did you ever think?
We were at 1.2.
1.2 million. I'm sorry.
Did you ever consider divesting of the pest control company and keeping the restaurant, or that was not a?
No, there was never an issue.
Yeah. Never even a thought.
So let's fast forward to 2020. Can you guys just bring us up to speed on, okay, this is where Paul's is at today. And then I want to get into the topic of what you guys have done, because I think I think a lot of folks can benefit from hearing. I think there's a lot of folks that listen to the podcast that are in smaller markets. And even I would say smaller guys in bigger markets could benefit, you know, from just saying taking over some sort of suburb. And so kind of bring us up to speed. And I don't know, maybe we'll start with you, Blair, kind of where you guys are at today. And then, Kent, maybe you can talk a little bit about how you guys got there.
So currently we have right around 41 staff. We have a hierarchy of two owners, a general manager who is Jay Townley, a former Dow AgriSciences man and a horticulturist. And he's been with us since 2006 as our general manager. Then we have a group of middle managers, two branch managers, a lawn manager, a sales manager, and a call center manager. And then a total of 41 total staff. This past year, we completed just under $6.9 million in revenue. We are right at 89% residential. And the commercial that we have is, Dan, you're making me nervous going to your 10 key. He's crunching.
That's $168,000 per employee. Best in class companies are at 120, 125 per employee. Yeah. So that's incredible.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Yes, as a compliment.
I didn't know you could see me on the 10 key though.
89%. Residential, and again, that which is not residential is very light commercial, and virtually no institutional or food handling type pest control. We during 2020 we produced 11.1% growth, and 26. This preliminary number, 26% net income for a 37. Composite. Our goal typically is in excess of 30. We always want to be in excess of 30 on the composite.
All right, let me pause you right there real quick, Blair, because I want to define that term. Yeah, yes. This is something that I look at quite a bit, and obviously anyone who spends any time with me knows that that's how I judge a success of a business. But composite of what Blair just mentioned there, that number is that is your net profit. Plus your net profit percent of revenue as well as your revenue growth. So if you're growing at 20% and you have 10% profit, then your composite is 30%. And by the way, you know, the fact that Kent and Blair are business partners, and they continue to grow the business and run such. I mean, it's rare that I, most of the time when you have two chiefs, it typically creates a lot of conflict in a company that it can't either grow or is not very profitable. And you guys have just killed it.
Just so real far. Quickly, the composite. So Orkin uses something like that. They still use it, but they call it the rule of 23. So they think that 23 is a good number. Kent and Blair are saying, well, it's got to be north of 30. And I think, Donnie, you probably are north of 30 with Triangle as well.
That's
but
correct.
23 is, you know, that's what Orkin considers a good number.
Yep.
Well, just kind of to go along with what you were just saying, Donnie, is that, you know, when Blair and I, you know, we had been working together for about 10 years before Paul passed. And in spite of that, you know, we saw a lot of examples of partnerships and things like that, or families working together. One of the things that I think has led to a lot of our success is that we didn't become business partners on a handshake. It's, you know, even though we had worked together, we played a lot together. You know, we did a lot of extracurricular things outside of the business together and enjoyed each other's company, got along really well. We still put in place a very specific and structured partnership agreement. And, you know, of course, over the years, that partnership, the needs for that partnership have changed. And as those needs have changed, we have changed that agreement as well. But we've always operated underneath a partnership agreement. And that just keeps everything, we both understand what's expected of the other. And we've agreed to live this way. And so it helps keeps the conflict, I won't say completely out of it. We have a little conflict here and there, but it's minor and it's rare.
How often do you reach for the partnership agreement to check?
I don't think we've ever reached for it.
What's interesting, if I could just interject, that as I recall in that partnership agreement, we each had almost 100% of the stock between us. There was a very small 2% that belonged to our mother-in-law. And I won't go into why she retained that. She absolutely wanted to retain that, but we set her as the arbiter. And there was no way on this planet that either Kent or I was going to go to our mother-in-law to settle a dispute. There was
Amen. She's actually the most powerful person in the company with that 2%.
That's right. Exactly right.
And so
not anymore. The need changed and we were able to get it away from her. So
I would just add one thing to what Kent said. And you know, there may be someone in the audience that thinks the way we do, but we absolutely feel like you know, this life is not everything. There is a life to come. Whatever you believe about that, that there's going to be a reckoning at some point. And we truly just don't want to have either the two of us or our families at such odds that we have to answer for you know, that for our behavior with respect to one another. So we have really tried to make sure that relationship, you know, there are conflict. It's just like a marriage. There is conflict. But at some point, you have to set aside, swallow your pride. You may think you got the right way to do it. And until you listen to the other side, you really don't know if you have the right way to do it. So, you know, being able to sit down in front of one another when there's conflict and say, look, this is really hard to talk about, but we got to talk about it. I think that's been a secret over the years. In 30 years that we've been together, and 20 years that we've owned the business together, I doubt there's been half a dozen times when it's felt like one of us was just bursting at the seams to get something out in the open. It just doesn't, it hasn't been a real problem as long as we were willing to talk about things.
So let's switch gears here for a moment. You guys are in the Tallahassee market. And let's just, I mean, give me the general population there in Tallahassee. Let's start there. What is it? What's your market size?
Well, I think the 300, we mentioned earlier, 385,000 is the metro area, but we actually service all the way to the coast, which is about 80 miles north to south, and probably around 150 miles, 125 miles east to west. We do have some accounts in Panama City, so it's a large geography, but 90% of what we do is in that 385,000 versus, say, a total of 500,000.
Let's err on the high end of that. Let's just say 500,000 people.
Yeah.
Do you say 6.7 million?
6.9 million
in a market of 500,000 people. It's absolutely amazing when you think about that.
Who's your next largest competitor, and what do you think they do?
Probably
it'd be Terminix.
Capiluto Terminix. Terminix was here as a small franchise, and they 6 years ago, going on 6 or 7 years ago, they purchased Capiluto Services and run it still as Capiluto. And Capiluto had always been a very quality competitor to us. And with the purchase by Terminix, you know, we initially saw and have continued to see some trickling towards us from that. Not as much as you might hope, but we definitely have seen some. And I think they're probably doing about what we are, but that's adding in the Terminix work.
So let's talk. Did you guys build kind of this, I mean, did you build this brand all with marketing? Did you do, I mean, I, okay, so I know you guys' story pretty well, and I'm asking you these questions just to bring everyone else up to speed. I also know that you guys do quite a bit of Centricon. Do you want to just think through or just talk out loud, like, okay, this is how we were able to get so much market share in such a small market? Because even if it's 90%, I mean, okay, 90% of 6 million, that's still really great for a market that's, you know, 300,000 or 385, whatever that number is. And so any thoughts of like, how did you do that?
Well, we were some of the first companies when Centricon first came out. We got the five problem site. And of course, those sites made believers out of us, and we've just kind of stuck with Centricon over the years. I think we fairly quickly noticed a dramatic difference in the number of retreats that we had, and you know, Dow's commitment at the time, you know, and I think they're still committed, but to make the product better and better and better. We always had reps that were very much helpful to us. We actually hired one of them to be our general manager, and so we've been very, very pleased with that product. What are you laughing about?
Just the fact that you hired one.
How did they feel?
There's others that we know of that we probably wouldn't have hired, but other companies have hired, and that's fine. But
let me just interject. Jay was our rep for a number of years, and then he actually went into another industry for a while, and eventually came back into the pest management.
And that's the clarification right there. That's the great. It's just like, thank you, Blair.
Yeah. He left and came back, so it was but when he came back, we snapped him up. But we were working on our brand the entire time, and I think in the smaller market, the big thing is, you know we have been able to we were fortunate enough to be able to purchase television advertising rather cheaply. And gosh, we've been doing that for 26 years, and just continually changing the commercials. We've always had a commercial running, or a number of commercials running on television. And again, not every market can do this, but we've been able to do it rather inexpensively.
And Blair, can you just tell them the tagline that you guys use? Because I think it's a great one.
Simple, tall Paul's, we'll get them all.
Yeah.
That's it. But I mean, no genius there. But you know, one of the key points, as Kent said, we have never, ever, ever quit on branding. And, you know, as a small operator, you need to decide how much branding you can do. If you can buy cheap cable, then buy cheap cable. If it's radio that you can afford, then buy radio, as much radio as you can. We happen to do both of those plus billboard work, and we've been with the same branding agency, O'Kelly Sammons Advertising, Jeff Sammons, for many, many years. And so we do market with Co-March, and we're very satisfied with that, but we have never quit on branding in our market.
I was going to say, that's a funny point, because by the way, this is my Ron Burgundy moment here, so just bear with me. But when I wrote Grow, which was the marketing book, I actually discouraged people from branding. And I cringed at doing it, because the fact is that you guys are pretty fortunate in that you can buy. Like, for example, in the Raleigh market where Triangle's at, you know, it's $100 a second. When you get into, you know, you guys' market, it's a little bit different. I do believe in branding. The problem is that when you're smaller, when you're competing against, you know, HVAC companies, you're competing against, you know, dealerships and those types of things. Oftentimes in these larger markets, it's cost prohibitive, and then you just have to buy leads. But in your case, it's almost like inverse. It just goes to show you exactly how powerful branding can be.
That also goes to show, Donnie, you also were not a big fan of.
Oh, I'm here. Definitely wrong. Yeah, here we go. Yeah,
here we go. But
now you know.
Well, but you the 30 guys, minute.
Go ahead.
So the 30-second commercial in your market really is kind of, you know, our budget for the. Well, I guess it's probably double that. We probably have $6,000 as a budget for a month in television, and we're.
Have you seen prices go up?
I think things are cyclical. Sometimes they're a little bit more pricey. Jeff does a really good job of buying that for us, and so. But we haven't, you know, that part of our budget is what, $120,000 is for this next year?
Right.
Something like that. So, you know, and we recognize that we're very fortunate. Our routes in Tallahassee are very, very tight. Most guys can get from one boundary of their route to the other within 5 minutes. And that's, you know, contributed as well to our success. One of the things we did early on is when Blair and I came on, we were not primarily a residential company. In fact, we had one of the largest property management companies in town, and we did all of the apartment work for them. And that, it was two full routes, and it sapped a lot of our time and really early on, that industry started changing, at least in Tallahassee, and we lost several of those. The company either sold them off and was no longer working with that particular property, and so we kind of needed to start, you know, changing what our structure was like. We were paying on. I don't even think it was an hourly rate. It was just a flat rate per week, and started looking at commission. And that forced us really to look at how, in the interest of the technician, how much with time was he investing on site of any property that he was ever on? And was it really worth it to him to do the job that we wanted him to do and that the customer wanted to do as well? And so as we started looking at that, our pricing adjusted to, you know, reflect the value of the time of the technician. And of course, you know, we had market forces to deal with as well. But when a technician goes on this on a property, he knows he's being compensated appropriately for that time. And I think that's been a big deal. Technicians are bought in, and they're one of our biggest sales forces.
Let me summarize real quick. I mean, you know, when you look at Paul's, and that, I mean, I think Paul's is a very well ran business, and I think you guys have made some really good decisions early on, and time has just worked its magic in you know, this divesting of, I mean, you guys are not completely out of commercial, but you're big in the residential. You've done a great job of building both the Centricon recurring revenue as well as your pest control recurring revenue. But I want to get real back briefly to folks who heard, hey, branding can get you a good way down the road. That absolutely is true. And so then the question I often get, and I want to answer it now just because I think a lot of folks would have this question, is like, okay, I'm in Atlanta. I'm in, I don't know, some really large market. I can't go and buy media for $6,000 a month. What do I do? Oftentimes what I recommend folks do, and I'm not saying that this is the thing to do, but is pick a suburb and then go online, because you absolutely can brand online for a fraction of the cost of which you can buy airtime, whether it be on the radio or TV. But I think it's amazing what you guys have done with your brand, and how you've, you know, over time, it's like most things, right? If you set it up properly at the very beginning, time just works its magic. And then next thing you know, you've got something really nice, kind of like what you guys have on board now. And so can you talk a little bit, and you guys are kind of transitioning to this now, let's talk about some early decisions that you made that you feel like has helped you build such a recurring base of what you have right now.
Well, I might bring up a couple. One, we did, just to elaborate briefly on what has been said, we weren't just in apartment work. We were in what I call, or what is called, institutional pest control, such as prison systems, state prison systems, county prison, county jails, smaller hospitals, all of the schools. At one point or another, we've done every jail, every prison, every school system in our market. And even in markets that we've divested from in South Georgia, we were doing this type of work, and we realized that this was fine, but it was not rewarding the service technician for his time the way Mrs. Jones would reward him, the way that a residential setting. So we converted it, and I call it converting institutional relationships for residential relationships. And we began to train then to the residential relationship. It's a relationship that A, is a whole lot more appreciated generally, because it's not driven by just dollars and not driven by a bid system. It's actually driven by Mrs. Jones appreciating her, are we still on?
Yep.
Donnie, we lost. Just,
okay. No, he's on. He's
okay. It's driven by Mrs. Jones appreciating her technician, and her technician giving her the best service possible. And so we made that decision early on, that in early 2000s, we made the decision that we would focus on the return on relationship. Okay. Some of the other things that we did,
Blair,
go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to say one of the things on there is, you know, we're here in Tallahassee, where FSU is a huge institution, right? And there can be times when you're bidding on a project like that, where your ego jumps in and says, you know, wouldn't it be nice to be able to say that we have all of the FSU's pest control work? Well, that's your ego talking. And of course, now in all in full,
per hour.
Yeah, and just to be perfectly, transparent? Neither Blair or I are Seminole fans. We are very much Gator fans. So it was never our ego, but it was some of our managers or salespeople's ego, which was fine. You do have to be careful that you don't feed your ego and you're not cutting pricing to get a job that's not, rewarding to the technician.
When you were doing prisons and schools and whatnot, do you remember what your dollars per hour were just to?
Like probably $60, $65 an hour.
So you're less than half of what you need to be. Right. And if you're paying your technicians a percentage of the route, they're not even making minimum wage.
No, and that's the thing. I remember having a conversation with a property owner, property manager who said, well, I'm gonna teach you about, you know, he didn't want to pay more than $2 per door per month for full entry into his apartment units every month. And he had to school me on why he couldn't pay 2.25. And it was all about his economics and this kind of thing. And I said, well, hold on a minute. Let's talk about the economics of motivation for your service technician. And when we went through what it took to do 100 apartments in a day and do them right, and getting $2 a door, and plus the callbacks that were invariably going to happen, this technician actually had to put on a couple of a residential accounts in the morning and a couple in the afternoon before he ever got to 100 units. So that's a day that just about kills a guy.
Yeah.
And then you multiply what his commission is going to be on that, and he's really discouraged. So
right.
Anyway, the point that I'm making is somewhere in there, we determined that that business wasn't for us. And we began to really take on what Kent likes to call, in the baseball metaphor, going after singles. And the single is selling Mrs. Jones, her family, her neighbors, and taking full advantage of what you're branding. And this is before the internet. Branding was causing the phone to ring and making sure that customer had a quality experience while they were on the telephone.
That's such a great point. I see these companies like, yeah, we do bird control. We do wildlife exclusion. We do all, and it's just, you know what? It's you get a nice home run every now and then, but what it takes to pull that off and
right.
Such a great point. I mean, it just, you know, to get set up for it, it's just like, man. So that's
we were one of the only companies that did fumigation in the up here for a long time, and we, you know, we talked about it. We said we lost money every single time we did a fumigation, and it wasn't because we lost money on that particular job, but it was because of the time and effort that it took away from other opportunities to go do that fumigation, and so we quickly got rid of that as well.
So we're getting towards the end here, and I'm going to do my best to summarize this, and I know I'm going to screw it up so you guys can make fun of me, but then fill in the gaps where I missed. But I will say Paul's is in probably the top 95 percentile of companies out there, if not in the top 99 percentile when you look at everything included, and when you look at the size that they are, the amount of market share that they have, the numbers that they run. And if we were to just to kind of, you put all that together. And just to kind of recap here, number one is that you guys have a partnership that works. You've got pretty well defined who does what, and you know how to resolve problems and make decisions. Number two, I love this concept of hitting singles, you know, focused on keeping it simple and keeping it on profitable recurring work. Number three is to brand and just stay consistent on that. I mean, I think the overall theme in all of these is consistency. And am I missing anything? I'm trying to, anything else you can think of that we need to add? I mean, obviously there's a lot more. I feel like we just scratched the surface. We didn't even get into it.
We've been very fortunate as well to be able to hire good people, Donnie. You know, we have far and away the best crew we've ever had this past year. Our technicians are selling most of the new work that comes in is sold by our technicians. That's all Blair and I don't drive that. We have couple of really good managers. Well, we support but we're not the ones driving it.
You're creating the culture that's making people want to come to work for you. So I would say
Well, in that case, yeah. but the sales, they have this group chat that we don't very often weigh in on. We just kind of watch it, but they motivate each other and have really made it a friendly competition. It's just, but we have really been fortunate to hire good people. When we recognized it, we hired them, and we've made some mistakes, but overall, we just really have a great group of people to work for us.
I think that's always a foundation of any great, I mean, especially a service company, right? Because at the end of the day, that's what you're selling. So, all right, Dan, any parting thoughts here? I mean, first of all, Kent and Blair, thank you guys for coming on. This has been a wonderful discussion. And again, there's so much more that's under the surface here, but I will say that if you got the impression that these are some sharp guys and they are very good business people, I would say you're 100% correct. And one of the things I always ask our guests is, Kent and Blair, is it okay if someone wants to reach out to you guys if they have a question? Would that be okay?
Absolutely.
You bet.
Excellent.
All right.
Yeah, what a great company, and just want to thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for your friendship, and one of these days we'll get back together with our peer group in person. And
I know, my gosh. Don't get that topic started. All right, and with that, yeah, that ends our session here with PFP Industry Insider.
Can I make another comment, Donnie?
Yeah, for sure.
You guys have put a lot of accolades on us, but the peer group concept has been a big deal for us as well. So thank
Absolutely.
You to you and to every one of the members of our peer group, and even our local competitors who we have a rapport with. If they're improving the industry, then it helps us all. And so thanks again, both of you, for your input into our business and for your friendship. And I think there's plenty more to talk about if we wanted to do it again at some point in the future.
I think we will. I am most certainly. In fact, I know we will. So thank you, guys. If anyone enjoyed this episode or any of our episodes, don't forget to rate and review us on Apple. And with that, thank you guys again, and we'll see you next time. Take care now.
Thanks so much.
All right.
Bye-bye.